San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce my main man of the hour. He is a CPA extraordinaire. He's a philanthropist. He's a marathon runner, very accomplished. And he's a best-selling author, and his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. I just came from Art San Diego.
What a cool small world. So did I.
I know. Sponsored by our sponsor, UBS. UBS, of course, is the major sponsor of Art San Diego. And what an incredible show. We had a little private reception there from 1 to 2:30 for about 30 or 40 people who stopped by. It was a lot of fun.
Well, let's tell people it's the fifth annual contemporary art festival. It's down at the Balboa Park Activity Center, just north of the old Naval Hospital, north of the Veterans Memorial Center there. And Rob Quigley designed it. We'll have him on the show.
And it runs one more day. So everybody listening, you can head down to Art San Diego in Balboa Park and at the Activity Center tomorrow.
And the website's really easy, artsandiego2013.com. And today, I bumped into good friend and San Diego icon, Ingrid Croce, and her son AJ even showed up. Ingrid's an artist, by the way. I didn't know that.
Yep, she had a nice exhibit down there. I looked at it.
Right, and she's opening up a new restaurant in January, so we'll tell people about that. But I even snapped some photos for her and of her and her son and her husband, Jimmy Rock, and that was cool.
Nice. We had another famous artist down there. He was a guest on our show last year, Mr. Gene Locklear.
Correct.
So we saw a lot of our friends.
Yes, it was just wonderful.
Hey, speaking of sponsors, I want to tell a story about La Valencia. We are live from La V in terms of their east wing over here in Kearny Mesa because the station hasn't gotten our equipment fixed yet.
But they are.
But they will. Yeah. But so I bought two bottles of wine there, as you know, Joe, a few weeks ago because my sister and brother-in-law are in town. And they downed the white wine that was from South Africa. Mm-hmm. Loved it. But they refused to open the red, which is an Antinori. And they wouldn't open the red because they said it's a total and complete collector's item. It was one of the best financial acquisitions I've made in many years because it's worth twice what Tammy sold it to me for.
Uh-huh.
And so they won't open it because it's a collector's item. But talk about a small world. My sister and brother-in-law met the Marchese Antinori when he was at Pebble Beach about 6 years ago. You know, Antinori has a huge family compound and winery in Florence. And, of course, this guy is famous in Italy. And they actually met the Marchese Antinori, whose bottle of wine they refused to open up because it's such a collector's item that I bought from the captain's list at La V. So everybody, there's still a few things left for sale.
Wow.
On the captain's list at La Valencia. Contact Tammy Wong there.
She is.
And there's some amazing finds. And I told him if it keeps going up in, you know, value, I may just take it back.
Well, you'll have to wrestle it away from them.
Right. And one quick thing before we have our phone-in guest to start the show. I wanted to wish June Lauber, daughter of our website genius, Courtney Lauber. June has the flu. That's why her mom couldn't come to Art San Diego. So June Lauber, get better as fast as you can, and you can take Monday off from school. Oh, wait a minute. That's a holiday. Okay. If you're still not feeling well, KFMB gives you permission, June, to take Tuesday off from school since Mondays.
June, you're supposed to get sick on Monday so you can skip Tuesday, but anyway, it'll work.
Maybe you can drag that out, June, and miss Tuesday. But June, Lauber, get better fast, okay?
Right. Hey, we've got a special guest on the line. He is an icon, and anybody who's been in San Diego since the 60s and beyond knows this gentleman. He was a world-class reporter and anchor over at Channel 10, Crosstown Station, and I've known him since probably 1977 or 80. But his name is Jack White, and I think he's on the line. Are you there, Jack?
I am indeed, Joe.
Wow, you sound great.
Well, listen, I want to know who gives permission to take an extra day off of school. Where were those people when I was in school?
Good question. I don't know, they're cracking down, I guess, a little bit, though.
Yeah.
But, Jack, I know there's a new sequel to Anchorman 2 coming out, and you had a lot to do with Anchorman 1. Now, Ron Burgundy, I know you and I, you know, you worked with Harold Green, and I, you know, used to see him on a daily basis. Was Will Ferrell supposed to actually, I mean, was the character actually based on Harold Green? That's the question.
Well, part of it was and part of it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
The structure of the man himself, the way he behaved and acted and talked, that was a composite of a number of people that you and I both worked with.
Right.
As for Harold Green, I gave the station, the movie studio, all of my old photo albums of my days on television.
Right.
And they found that Ron Burgundy looked like Harold Green.
He did.
He does.
Uncanny. Yeah.
The first day I saw him in makeup, I walked down and I looked at him and I started to say, Harold, what are you doing here?
Now, were you actually up on the set when they were filming this movie? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So
yeah, it was filmed originally. It was going to be filmed at Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at movie studios these days, they do everything but make movies. They have luncheons and award ceremonies and all kinds of things. So an old mattress company out in Glendale, the buildings were converted for the movie studio. And they actually built an exact replica of the news set that I had worked on for so many years.
Oh, my gosh.
The weather board, everything was exactly as we had it.
You mean it was the news, the gray background and all? You mean that look or something?
That was the look.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
With the chroma key and Captain Mike and all that. Wow. So you had a lot to do with, did you have a lot to do with the writing of the script? Or?
No, I really didn't.
Okay.
I remember one day I was telling them some stories about things that had happened mm-hmm. when we were doing the news, and the director looked at me and he says, you know, this stuff's better than what we got in the movie.
So where did Will Ferrell actually get the idea to do a movie like this? I mean, just watching, he was watching old 70s newsreels or something? Or?
No, I think that it was a project that he had in mind for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and the director was a very good friend of his. They had worked on Saturday Night Live together as writers.
Mm.
And so I think they kind of had the bits and pieces to make the show go.
Mm-hmm.
And they just called in some people that had worked in the business and said, you know, how far off are we on some of this?
Yeah. Now, Harold used to sign off with "Take care of one another," San Diego. To words mm-hmm. to that effect. Now, where did Will come up with "Stay classy, San Diego"? Was that just something they collaborated on?
That's just something.
Well, it sure stuck.
It certainly did.
Anyway, Jack. So you're a big film buff and a magic buff. So you've got a big film collection, right?
I do. I have 16mm. Which is pretty outdated now. Everything has gone to DVD and that sort of thing. But occasionally we'll get an old film out and crank up the projector and away we go.
Isn't that great? Now, we had a big party for you at Channel 10 a couple of years ago, and they had some magicians there. So what's your connection with magic? Are you a member of the Magic Castle and all that?
I am a member of the Magic Castle.
Wow.
I'm a charter member of the Magic Castle.
Really? Whoa.
And I think I was in college when the Magic Castle came about, which was 50 years ago this year.
Whoa.
I am the past international president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah.
Hey, did you ever cross paths with Johnny Carson? Because he was a big magic buff.
Johnny was a very big prestidigitator.
Did he ever show up there? Did you ever bump into him at all or not?
I haven't. No.
Yeah.
But Cary Grant used to be a...
Really?
A regular member up there.
Well, who would have thunk that? Wow.
Yeah. And I would see Carl Malden a lot.
Huh.
Streets of San Francisco.
Yeah.
What will you do?
Yeah. They were all actually very good in their own right.
Yeah.
Of performing.
Yeah.
And,
so what do you think of the current state of local TV news, Jack? Do you still track it much at all, or is it...
I do. I watch it every night.
Really?
You know, I think that there are some nights that I watch it and say, boy, I wish I could be out there working on that story.
Uh-huh.
And then there are other times that I say, boy, I'm glad I don't have to touch that one.
Well, today, you know, you got to lug your own camera stuff and probably have to edit and do everything else. It's getting pretty labor-intensive out there, you know.
Well, it is, but, you know, these new cameras are very lightweight.
Yeah.
And I've used them for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
I had a little production company for a while, and... they are, I've always called them a television station in a shoebox.
Yeah.
Because they are just a lightweight little thing, and you can do all kinds of crazy stories and put effects in it that we were unable to do years ago.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing more and more kids put stuff up on YouTube and get all kinds of hits and views and everything else. So,
but. Yeah. Oh, listen, these young people today who have been around video literally all of their life, they are incredible.
Yeah.
The things they do.
Yeah. But, Jack, it's so good to hear your voice. We have to move along because we've got an in-studio guest, but we'll check in with you from time to time and get your take on what's going on in the world and such. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
All right, Jack. Thanks for calling. You stay classy, Jack.
All right, I will.
All right, good night now. Hey, let's take our break right now, Richard. What do you say? And then we'll devote the rest of the show to Jake Ducey. So stay tuned. Come right back after this. The award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. We are back with Richard Musio, myself, Joe Vecchio, and our in-studio guest, Richard. Should you introduce him, or shall I?
I'll introduce him. His name is Jake Ducey.
Oh, you always do that. You got to build it up and give the name
at
the end.
No, but here's the thing. He's not our youngest. He's 22, but he's not our youngest guest ever.
I know.
He's our second youngest guest ever.
Give him the big build-up and then say his name. Okay, go.
No, I'm not going to do that because I don't do it that way.
All right.
But funny story.
I like a little drama myself.
Jake Ducey, his family knows Craig Blanky's family real well. You know, Craig is our rep here at KFMB, and the Blanky family and the Ducey family.
Excuse me, a senior account executive.
Senior account executive, but... You know, the kids grew up together and played baseball together, and so Craig sent me an email when we booked Jake. He says, "Is that the same Jake Ducey that we knew when he was growing up?" I'm like, "I don't know, Craig. I don't know your whole personal life, but I'll find out and let you know." Well, and it turns out the answer is yes.
Well, now, Jake was a California surfer. He dropped out of college, had some drug problems, and went in search of deeper meaning. He's got a best-selling book out, and he's a local guy. And I think there's a movie on the way. But ladies and gentlemen, Jake Ducey. Jake, welcome to our show.
Yeah, I'm honored to be out here right now. We're shaking hands underneath the microphone.
And that's jakeducey.com, by the way, D-U-C-E-Y. But where should we start? You were born where and what part of San Diego?
Well, I was born in La Jolla, but just at the hospital. Grew up in Encinitas.
Okay.
Went to La Costa Canyon High School.
Okay.
Grew up playing sports, I think, like a lot of people in the area. And I excelled in sports. I was first team All-CIF for La Costa, and you know, we were Division I, number one team in San Diego,
and basketball, right?
Yeah, and everything was set up around sports, and I kind of based whether my life was going well contingent upon how many points I scored in the game, not about how I was feeling. And
so, how big is your family? How many brothers, sisters?
I've got one brother.
Okay, you're older or younger?
He's older than me.
Okay. Did you play with Budinger?
I was a freshman when he was a senior, and he dunked on me during our Halloween tournament.
Well, he dunked on everybody, so.
We can put that up for you. He's a tall guy. I got to hold the mic up here for him, Richard.
Yeah, I know.
So, all right. So, you're the younger brother. He's only 22, folks. And I'll tell you, he's packed a lot of life in the 22 years thus far, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's been fun for sure. And it's as you said, it's going in a fun direction. I'm working on a new book that'll be out about this time next year. And right now, working on the screenplay with some influential people in the Hollywood industry, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. So you went to high school here, went to Cal Lutheran, and then decided to call it quits.
Right. Well, what happened basically was I played my senior year here at La Costa Canyon, had torn something in my knee, and was out a while. And I started to think, you know, maybe there's some other things to do besides all day, every day playing sports.
Yeah.
And maybe I could find something more out of my life. I started to become aware as a freshman in economics class due to a lot of the things that are threatening our world. And primarily for me, something I really hit home was the poverty. When you grow up in North County, San Diego, and you always have a roof over your head, and you find out that more than like a quarter of the world is not even close to having that, it really wakes you up.
I'd say close to 20-30, but what's the poverty level in San Diego County alone, Richard?
I'm not sure, but it's not just the world. I mean, for example, we, Nike Foundation, my big charity event's coming up Thanksgiving morning. We're expecting 15,000 people in downtown Oceanside. Well, Nike Foundation gave us 300 pairs of shoes, of running shoes, to pass out to kids in Oceanside whose families can't afford to buy a pair of running shoes. Wasn't enough. 300 pairs weren't enough.
Yeah, right.
So it's not just in the world. It's even here in our community.
Well, I kind of blame the media and the news. I mean, we don't hear the word poverty anymore.
We don't. And especially as I was studying business and thought, you know, I'd go to school. I'd excel in basketball. Then I would get my degree in business. Then one day I'd get a big house. Then one day I'd get a gold watch, and I'd have all these things. And everything was great, except for I wasn't happy, and none of my questions.
But isn't that the American dream, Jay?
Isn't that the American dream, right? And I think what we confuse is that my dream? And I think instead we follow the American dream rather than our own dream. And while we're on a show talking about it's our money, it's our life. Freshman year, I'm asking the teacher why we can't audit the Federal Reserve and asking these questions. He's saying, "Shut up, this isn't in the book." And then one day I just had enough and went home and I slammed my door, and it kind of led me on this adventure, which was, man, my generation has to make some changes in the way we're going, or else we may be facing extinction in the human race.
But you make some personal bad choices that you had to deal with.
Yeah, I almost crashed my car. And I almost died in a car crash when I was drunk. Flipped my car 4 times, 400 feet down a ravine.
Oof.
Was using a lot of pills. And and I kind of likened part of that to, I wasn't doing something that was really exciting me with my life. And so I was kind of numbing myself, if you will.
Self-medicating.
Yeah.
So you actually gave up a college basketball scholarship to hit the road, so to speak?
Yeah, I guess a promising career as a tall person in business to sell stuff. I was studying Chinese. I kind of had it started to be planned out a little bit. I'd study Mandarin, and then I'd work for some corporation as a translator. Basically what happened is I started reading some self-improvement books, Jack Canfield, some people like that. And I said, man, if they can do it, if they can make a difference, if they can take a risk on their dreams, then I can. And one of my favorite quotes is by Ralph Waldo Emerson. He says, "Do not go where the path may lead. Instead, leave the path and make your own trail." And I realized the path I wanted was on was not mine.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's a great quote. I quote Gandhi's, "Be the change that you want to see in the world."
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so that's why I had to do it. I saw that there was a lot of us not doing the things we really love to do. And when that happens, it's hard to have the energy to look into what's happening in social issues, environmental issues, political issues. And I meant, man, I want to be an example.
So at 19, you dropped out and decided to go across the country. Where'd you want to go?
I started in Guatemala. I'd been reading a bit about it, and on one hand, I heard it was one of the most beautiful places. And
you wanted to go down there and do what?
But can we back? I mean, do you just like fly down to Guatemala and say I'm starting there? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. Basically, what happened is I started to ask myself, well, what could I do? And I had a little bit of money saved up, and I thought, well, you know, I could go travel. Where could I start? You know, I started thinking, well, I'd go to South America, I'd go to Australia, Europe, I'd go to Asia. Well, I've been hearing about Guatemala, and that's Central America. One hand I heard it was beautiful, one hand I heard it was dangerous.
So
was
your goal just to travel and get away, or to go down there and just seek something, or just...
It was a combination of the both, but honestly, part of it was to get away. Part of me was like, man, maybe I'm not going to come back, and of course... A few things happened along the way to make me.
But I tell young kids, you know, everyone, you know, why wait till you're 70, 80 years old to travel? You should do it when you're young. You have energy. You know, you don't need first class accommodations or whatever. And, I admire that. I've been traveling, but I waited, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I went some tours in high school and all, but I didn't do what you did, you know, radical departure. Just
it was a bit radical for sure.
See you later.
But Jake, did your friends and your network,
everyone thought
say
I was crazy?
Nuts?
Yeah, everyone did, except for my dad and my brother. Everyone thought I was crazy, including pretty much.
And were they willing
family.
to tell you that to your face?
Yeah, I pretty much lost all my friends, and now all of them have written me back again since my book launched and made the best-selling list. <It's>...
A little notoriety can heal a lot of wounds and whatever, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
So I started in Guatemala, and, you know, I saw all these kids that had holes in their shoes, holes in their teeth from eating popsicles. That was their meal, and it really touched me. I've been reading in books, you know.
A lot of fast food down there, right?
I mean, well, where I was, it was not fast food. It was a little mountainous town. Mm-hmm. What they had, basically the kids were eating popsicles. So that was their breakfast, and they maybe paid 25 cents more for more later. Huh. And I started to see, man, okay, there's all these people that are happy that don't have anything. And that's kind of what started sparking the rest of my journey around, which I went through Australia, stayed on the beach. I was actually hitchhiking around and decided to go to Indonesia because I wanted more third world. And ultimately what happened is I lost all my bank cards when I was in Indonesia, and I met a local man that was selling things on the corner and took me into the concrete shacks where they live. I was in what we would liken to as a ghetto, and he took care of me, gave me food. I tried to give him money a few weeks later when I got a wire transfer, wouldn't take it. He said, "I just want to help people. I just want to help." And ultimately what happened is we were hiking up in the rainforest one day and we were climbing up to a waterfall, climbing up rocks, him and a few of his friends, and I fell off a cliff about 12 feet, covered my head, and I saw my whole life flash before my eyes. And they jumped off after me and saved me. I was crying on the ground because it was the most incredible thing someone's ever done for me. And that's when I realized, man, I'm not looking for something in the world in order to make a difference, that it's these realizations, it's these experiences, it's the passion within us. And I was like, man, I got to write a book. Mm-hmm. And that's what prompted me to come home and write this book and now on this journey that I'm on.
So Into the Wind, where did that title come from?
Yeah, Into the Wind. It wasn't about taking the safe route, the secure route. It was about, you know, in sailing, it's about going against the wind. As I said, man, I got to challenge myself and go the road less traveled, I guess.
Yeah, but let's hold off. We got to take a break right now with Jake, but we'll get more into the book and more of your life when we come back. Hang on. All right, we're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. And over to Richard to thank our terrific sponsors.
Thanks again to lovely La V, La Valencia Hotel in La Jolla, and for that lovely bottle of Antinori red wine that my sister and brother-in-law, Bill and Janet, refused to open because it's such a collector's item. Michael Carantra and Drew Freitas at UVS, also sponsors of Arch San Diego. Again, everybody get out there, and last day is tomorrow, Sunday. Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, best business valuation firm on the planet. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, great CFO company. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Don Epic CPA and Paul Polito CPA with Polito Epic CPAs in Vista. Best business bank in San Diego, that would be Regents Bank. Mr. Sean Puckett, Mr. Steve Sefton. Joel Gruskin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. And last but certainly not least, our newest sponsor, Brenda Geiger with Geiger Law Group, great estate planning attorneys. And Brenda's going to be on the show, I think it is in 2 weeks, the 23rd, if I've got my dates right, or whatever that Saturday is, 2 days, 2 weeks from now. An interesting story, Joe. As you know, you attended a bit of this. I had a 3-day continuing education symposium that my continuing education company hosted for CPAs and attorneys who came from around the country to hear us speak. But five of our sponsors presented there. That would be Michael Carantra with UBS, Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, Joel Gruskin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, and Brenda Geiger with Geiger Law Group, plus everybody got to put up with me all day.
So they just got an extra plug there, Richard.
They did.
For no additional
charge. But the point is, they aren't just sponsors who just want to get their name out there. These are the best in the business. They're collaborators. They're our partners in the success that we have here in the community, in the business community, and beyond.
Correct. They're hand-picked sponsors. We don't get them out of the phone book, folks. Richard's known them many years and worked with them and with many successful outcomes, correct?
That's it. And they can find out more about us where, Mr. Vecchio?
Well, if they just fire up their smartphone, PC, whatever they're using these days, I know it's changing by the day what we log on to, but get on iymoney.com, click on sponsors. All their personal information is there, their contact information, and have at it. They're great people. So back to our guest, Richard, Jake Ducey.
Jake, so you're taking this journey. How did you decide to go from one place to the next? Was it sort of random, or was it because you wanted to experience certain cultures, or what was it?
Well, ultimately, what I really wanted to experience was getting out of the routine that I grew up in. And so that led me to third world countries. But the ones that I picked, that none of that happened until just before the things would unfold themselves. I wanted to get over to Australia and then Indonesia kind of just surfaced through talking to people. And that led me, I didn't go to go do many tourist things. Often a lot of times the locals would say to me, why don't you ever do any tourist things? Why would I do that? Mm-hmm. So it kind of was all sparking as things were unfolding.
And did you know as you were taking these travels that you were going to write the book? I mean, did you start keeping notes? How did you keep track of the experiences?
Yeah, well,
you
I journaled.
You must have experienced a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I journaled every single day, at least once a day. And I kind of, in the back of my mind, thought that I would write a book. And then as these situations in Indonesia where I fell off the cliff and some things like that along those lines occurred, I was like, man, I think this could be pretty interesting. And it kind of just kept unfolding like that.
I wish I could fall off a cliff and write a book. 22 years old, this guy's got a book. This is really cool.
It took me 40 years to write my book, Joe. I had to wait 40 years.
And have coffee with me and tell you about
it. Yeah, exactly. But I was like 40 years later, okay, now I'll do it.
So what's your play? Anyway, that's his book, Jake.
Yeah, right here.
That's right.
So how long were you gone for?
6 months. You know, I thought part of me was like, I'll go for a year or two. Part of me is like, maybe I'll never come back. And I realized that what it's Picasso who said that the purpose of life is to find our gifts and then share them with the world. And I realized that I had something to share with the world. And so that was what sparked me coming back.
So when you come back, is it odd? Is it uncomfortable? Do people treat you different?
Yeah. I writing became how I coped with the world, actually. It was about 2 days back, and I was wondering why everyone was walking so fast and why nobody liked to talk about anything except for this and that. And I didn't get to come on to this radio show, so I was a little bit bored with conversation, and so writing became my way that I started coping with being back. Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's probably good therapy and some soul searching and learning to express yourself, and you know, you dig deep and then you share, right?
Is that... Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's basically...
But were your friends still your friends, or do they sort of shun you?
I mean, they shunned me at this point. I think they thought I was cool, but most of them shunned me because if we went out, I wanted to talk about the government or social issues or consciousness, and usually they wanted to talk about was the latest
I'll give
album.
You my number. You can call me anytime, Jay. I love talking about that stuff.
So I was a little bit, it was like, oh no, please. It was like my mom used to always tell me when we'd go out to dinner to hold my tongue.
But I mean, isn't it a little bit threatening for them because they're thinking about the right school, the right career, the right whatever?
Oh, it's very threatening when someone's lifestyle is saying that essentially that you don't need this or that. All you need to do is look within yourself to find what it is that you really love to do, and then as he was saying, draw that out into the world. So I think so. I think it definitely can be.
Yeah, because my oldest, I've got three kids. My son's 22, my daughter's 21 and 17. My son is still in college. A lot of his friends have just recently graduated. He's also working as an accountant at an insurance company in Encinitas. But a lot of his friends who sort of took the right courses in high school, went to the right college to have the right career, they're coming out of college and there really isn't anything meaningful for them to do. And they're having, I think, some, what would you call it, buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
Stress.
I mean, you're also 22. Have you had any of your constituents from your high school class or around that age say anything like that?
Pretty much everyone. You know, we're the first generation in history expected to earn less and have less than the previous generations. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know that the student loan debt is longer than any numbers that I could say off within the last 20 minutes of this show.
And not to mention the LIBOR scandal. See me at the break.
So we've got all these things happening, and I think what we're seeing is clear. What we were talking about before we went on air about the innovation economy, that it's clear, like Steve Jobs says, that innovation is connecting the dots. And I think the dots that all young people and people of all ages need to connect is, what is it that I love to do? Who do I know that can help me share this with the world? What are the steps that I could take? And I think those are important questions that we need to start asking ourselves if, as you said, we want to find some meaning in what we're doing with our life, with our work.
You know, you made a good point. We have this whole myth of the self-made man or self-made person, and really you have got to attach yourself to some winners out there who are, you know, people who have done it and willing to help you out, see something in you, and that's how,
that's why I had Laird Hamilton write the foreword to my book.
Nice. good choice.
But isn't that right, Richard, that no one is self-made? No one becomes successful in a bubble, for gosh sake. We're all in this together.
No,
right?
It's collaboration. It's building communities. So Jake, do you find that a lot of people have a difficult time, shall we say, defining or understanding or even knowing what their dreams are?
Yeah, I think it's pretty difficult, especially when we live in a culture that's it's not really built off self-expression. And so I think maybe when we start to go down that avenue, we meet resistance, maybe within some of our own thoughts, but also from other people. And I think a lot of the times it's hard for us to make decisions too. Mm-hmm. We're usually got so much stuff going on that we don't really want to do, so we don't really have time to do the things we really want to do. And when we start to do it, then we're not good at it, so we put it down 5 minutes later. And I think it's a little bit of a cycle. I always ask the question in workshops that I run and speeches. I ask, what would have to happen 1 year from now in order for you to look back and say it was your most successful, your most fulfilling year yet? Creating the vision. You know, I read something about most of the heart attacks occur, a large percentage of them, between the hours and 6 and 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. on Monday morning. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, there's something to say that we've got a lot of people waking up.
That's why I don't get up till 10 o'clock on Monday.
So exactly that, I think just sitting with it and trying to define what is it that would make us feel filled, make us feel successful, and working towards that and sitting with it instead of saying, and I don't know, and I don't care, or it doesn't matter. Those aren't possible answers. And I think we, a lot of the times, as you said, it's hard for us to define things because we say that. I don't know, doesn't matter, I don't care.
Well, people say, if only, or if I didn't, or, yeah. You know, whatever, you know, if I only had more money, or if I only had more time, or if I wasn't with this person, or whatever the excuse du jour is.
Right.
It's funny.
But a lot of people make the mistake, you know, I think they use materialism as a diversion. Well, if I have a bigger car, bigger house, and you know, whatever, I'll be happier. And I think we all know that with age, that material goods in and of themselves do not make you happy. There's it goes deeper than that. I think it's probably your relationship with your family or whatnot, if you're lucky enough to have, you know, it's a good loving relationship.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I just interviewed Rob Machado, right, you know, surf legend down local here, and I asked him this because he was at the top of the industry, one of the biggest industries in the world. He's a poster child. I said, what made you, he just quit at the pinnacle of his success. And he said, man, you know, when we dream of something, and when we get there, we dream of something else. And usually what we dream of is the next house, the next car. And what I realized is what was important was two things. It was my family, and it was making a difference.
Yeah, it's. I just read another study. Some guy in Harvard tracked people for decades, and it really turned out to be the relationship they have with their mother, their father, one or the other. You know, and if you're lucky enough to have a good, you know, at least one parent with a good loving relationship, but and your friends and family, and really that it boils down to that. I mean, you know.
Yeah, although I found that people of Jake's generation, they're actually interested in making their community a better place too. The whole issue of sustainability, what's this world going to look like in 50 years, 100 years? Will it even be here in 200 years, this planet? Like my generation, most of my friends, no offense intended, you guys, but a lot of them just don't think about that. And the younger generation,
the mothers do. The mothers do, because
the mothers do, right? Yeah. But you need more than just mothers thinking about that.
Yeah, and I think that gives me a lot of hope. Sometimes people will say after a talk that I'll give, "How do you have any hope?" And I say, "Well, I mean, I think there's two things: one, you can have hope, or you cannot have hope. Yeah. But if you don't have hope, the world's going to look pretty grim." And I think it's hopeful to see that half the world's population's 30 years or under, and that. Right now, with the internet, I go on a tour. I call it Inspire My Generation Tour. I go around in colleges, and I say that's the half the world's population is 30 years and under, but also somebody like Justin Bieber, whomever it is, they release a YouTube video and they get 500 million views in a week or two. So that means that we can reach that many people with any type of message. And then I think then it goes back to that Picasso quote is the purpose of life is to share your gift with the world, and using these channels that already exist in order to reach the world on an international or global scale.
That's great. Well, let's come back and you can share some more in our last segment. Hang on, we'll be right back with It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with our special guest, Jake Ducey, in studio. Jake Ducey, DUCEY.com, who wrote a book, Into the Wind, My 6-Month Journey, Wandering the World for Life's Purpose. And he's got a new book coming out, too. But anyway, where should we go in this last segment, Richard?
I want to ask about your new book. You said it's called The Purpose Principles?
Yeah, it's called The Purpose Principles, How to Get More Meaning from Your Life. And the foreword's by Jack Canfield, the creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul. And basically, you know, there's that book, Think and Grow Rich, that came out in the early 1900s. And
Napoleon Hill Foundation.
Yeah, exactly. And I asked the question. I said, man, but what about you? When I show that to other young people, they say, oh, I don't care about Henry Ford. I don't care about this. I say, okay, well, who are the people that are doing these things today and geared towards, I asked the question, what's the common thread between the greatest social contributors and achievers of human potential today? So I broke it into 27 principles, and I'm telling the stories of anyone from Jack Canfield to Rob Machado, Laird Hamilton, Amber Lyon, who's a 3-time Emmy Award-winning journalist.
They love Steve Jobs.
Right, so I got Steve Jobs in there for a few chapters. I've got a few people that aren't alive anymore, Martin Luther King and a few other individuals like that, but all people that my generation can relate to, and I'm tying my story through that, but illustrating these points through the stories of these very influential individuals. I interviewed Immortal Technique, who sold the most independent hip-hop albums in the world. He's a political activist, and all of his music is geared political. And so a lot of people like that. And I interview him, and I say, okay, where does this fit in to my format? And then I tell their story through it. I interviewed Bucky Lassick, local guy last mm-hmm. week that just won all four gold in the X Games for vert skating. Hmm. Different people like that.
So what are some good takeaways, Jake, when people hear you talk? What can they take with them that can help them out?
Yeah, I think the first thing to me, it's the first principle of the book, and that's having a vision. So, and I think that's what we find. We have this romantic affair with the word visionary today, especially with Steve Jobs passing and the movies. And I think what we forget to do is ask what makes these people who they are. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, whomever it is. What are these people all have in common? Well, I think the first step is that they have a vision. They have a clear vision. And when you know that, you know what you will or won't stand for.
So like you throw everything off the table and do a real self-examination.
I think it's important if we really want to feel fulfilled and have a really high level of self-respect, because then it's the integrity.
So is there an aptitude test? Or, I mean, how do you do you talk, do you talk to people? I mean, how do you find it?
Yeah, well, that goes to me back to that question. What would have to happen 1 year from now for you to look back and say it was your most successful, your most fulfilling year in your life? And I think what we find out when we ask that question most seriously, I think we find out what's really important to us a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. And whether that's for some people, that's the environment, some young people listening or people that are not so young anymore. I think one thing I heard is, I forget who said it, that our dreams never have an expiration date. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important to find out, one, what we're passionate about, then what's the vision that we can work towards. A couple things that I'm passionate about and how I created my vision is, man, it stinks to see that we're at the highest rate of teen suicide ever per capita, mm-hmm. and also just in general for psychotropic drugs prescribed. So I wrote this inspirational book and the next inspirational book, because I think a lot of that is actually that we don't have a vision. We don't have a lot of meaning out of our life. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I was passionate about, and that created my vision in order to help people find more meaning.
And you developed a 501c3, and what's that all about?
Yeah, well, we actually... When I went down to Guatemala, I saw these kids that had nothing, and I vowed that when I was done that we'd help them out. So we used part of my proceeds for the Into the Wind, which made the best selling list, to mm-hmm. help out down there. And we help out kids. And basically the premise is, I believe that if everyone has the basic essentials met for them, whether that's in San Diego, whether that's in Africa or anywhere in between, that once we have those basic needs met and we're not in a state of flux or fear or worry or sickness, then we can begin to make a contribution to the world. So that's what it's about. And I've got a godson down there in Guatemala now. That's where we started out to build a little center down there. And his name's Jake Oakeslaw Gomez, the gringo de Guatemalteca is what they call him. So that's what it's about. It is about, I believe that the future's in young people's hands. And so I think that's where really we need to put a lot of attention. I think we should be putting more funding on a local and national levels into our children, into our school systems. And so that's what it's about.
And you just gave a TED Talks. How does one get to give a TED Talks? I mean, do they
how does one get to give a TED Talks? You know, the funny thing is that it just kind of happened.
I mean, they contacted you?
They contacted me actually about another local guy, Domingo Ruiz. He's a New York Times bestselling author. His book, The Four Agreements, made Oprah list, and we share the same management. And so they contacted him, and he couldn't do it.
Really?
Which is
that's
how I've gotten a lot of great events.
What's the title of your TED Talk?
It's called The Difference Between Learning It and Living It. Between Learning It and Living It. And that'll be out in a few weeks here.
Okay, and what's the difference?
The difference is that I write in the book is that what I realized while I was sitting down and in college freshman year and started reading a bunch of inspirational books, I realized I wasn't living an inspired life. That there's a lot of us that say, whether we even read self-development type of books or not, we've all heard you can do anything, anything's possible. And I realized I was one of those people that I could memorize most quotes, but I wasn't living an inspired life. And I think learning it is finding out all the reasons why our dream isn't possible, or why we need to wait, why, as you said earlier, if we don't have the right money, other resources, connections, talent, whatever it is, that's learning it, figuring out all the reasons why not. But living it, that's taking action even when we're scared, because that's the common thread that I found between Laird Hamilton, Rob Machado, whomever it is. They're all scared. Everyone's scared, but it's taking the action anyways. And to me, that's living it, is that knowing that there's never going to be a right time when everything's perfect. So why not now?
Yeah, I always say, don't ask the question why, ask the question why not.
Yeah, right.
So it's one of my favorite quotes.
There you go. We're going to wrap it up pretty soon, though, here, Richard. So
why?
Because we're almost out of time. But anyway, Jake Ducey, thanks so much for being our guest. Get over to jakeducey.com and get the book Into the Wind.
Yeah, and you can also check it out on Amazon right now. They're doing a cool sale.
On Amazon
Jake,
also.
Jake, really appreciate it, my friend.
Yes.
Thank you. It was awesome to be here.
Thank you, Richard. Good seeing you again. And thanks to Justin Hart, our sound engineer, always making us sound good. Thanks to Craig Blanke, our account executive. Thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius here. Get over to Art San Diego, folks. ArtSanDiego2013.com in Balboa Park. Tomorrow is the last night. Go say hi to Ingrid Croce. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Good night now.